I'll invite our last speaker before the break, Dr. Sabina Grunwald. She's going to talk about spatially explicit and spectral soil carbon modeling in Florida.
Thank you. This talk is actually more in review of some of the work that our group has been conducting in the state of Florida. And this also continues some of the work that Nikki just presented to you. Now, when we think of soil carbon as in sink in the global context, we have to look at a few numbers first. In particular, soil carbon sequestration, it was suggested that it could meet at most one-third of the current yearly increase in atmospheric CO2. But, of course, this takes an extended period of time. Now, if you look at some numbers in terms of soil respiration, losses in terms of carbon from the soil pool, the numbers are very, very high, about 98 petagram at a global scale, or rates of 0.1 petagram carbon per year, recently estimated by a meta-analysis by Bond, Lamberti, and Thompson. So these are very high numbers compared to global assessments of how much soil carbon can be sequestered in agricultural lands, Ratan Lal, estimated 0.4 to 1.2 petagram carbon. So these numbers become important later on also in the talk to also put our results and findings into context. Soil carbon sequestration, if you look at measured rates of soil carbon accrual under different management practices, about in the range of 1 megagram carbon per hectare and year. But of course, these numbers are much, much smaller than worldwide net primary productivity on cropland, about 3 times larger, these numbers. So in essence, we face a soil carbon dilemma because, first of all, in terms of assessment of gains and losses that we see in this graph, we are dealing with large variations in soil carbon sequestration in space and across time. We also have to consider soil carbon saturation dependent on the state of the soil. Some soils simply store already large amounts of carbon and they may not sequester that much carbon anymore. Usually also external driving forces or change in terms of land use or climate change can foster even proportionally larger changes in soil carbon than if we stick to persistent conditions on the ground. And of course, we have to consider how we measure this in terms of our observation techniques to find also techniques that are sensitive enough, for example, mid-infrared that we just also heard about a few talks, that has the capability to collect dense enough data sets in space and time to allow us accurately to measure also carbon changes. Because this carbon paradox that we are facing includes that we are losing also carbon through soil respiration, but we can do this only to build up soil carbon in our soils if we suppress also microbial activity, in essence, stifle respiration rates. But with fixed inputs of carbon, in essence, if we keep the net primary productivity constant, we cannot easily accomplish this to increase our soil carbon stocks without suppressing respiration. So we face this conundrum by accomplishing carbon sequestration mainly by constraining microbial activity, but of course then we diminish in essence all the ecosystem services and functions that soils provide. So this carbon paradox is quite interesting and of course alludes to several questions in terms of the purpose and the magnitude also of carbon change and carbon sequestration. Now, our specific research aims that I will present today allude to assessments done in Florida, where we looked at geospatial assessment of soil carbon stocks. We modeled soil carbon change and sequestration rates in context of environmental conditions and forcings, looking also at a change of the system in terms of land use and also climate. And also I will present some summary of spectral-based carbon modeling in under various conditions in Florida conducted by our group. Now, we had an extensive sampling done across the state, and Nikki luckily presented the map that showed the soil sampling locations across the state of Florida. Some of these samples that were collected in 2009 were actually co-located with historic sites. So we were able to revisit historic sites and assess the soil organic carbon sequestration rates in Florida, covering about a time frame from 1965 to 2009. Now, the closely co-located sites are highlighted here, where you see also the losses and the gains of soil organic carbon across the state of Florida. If we relax some of the conditions and look at the co-located sites at a distance of less than 300 meters, you see these sites here shown on the right-hand map. Now, geographically, there seems to be no patterns that are consistent in terms of gains and losses, because in some instances, gains and losses occur at close proximity to each other. So there might be other factors that are driving these gains and losses that occurred. Now, at all of our sample locations in the topsoil to assess soil organic carbon sequestration, we found that overall there was a mean of 0.0116 kilogram per square meter in year. Median is slightly higher, as you see also the standard deviation rates. Now, if we compare this to the soil organic carbon storage in this system, that is extremely high, as a matter of fact, identified by Guo et al. As the highest carbon stored, soil organic carbon stored in all states in the U.S., we find that it's a small proportion out of the carbon stored that accounts about 35.3 kilogram per square meter. So we are dealing actually with very small fractions that are sequestered in these highly organic soils, because these rates are actually quite high in terms of the storage assessment. Of course, here we are looking at a profile that is 2 meter in depth, and here we are looking at the numbers on the top, only at the topsoil. Now, if we compare these numbers to other assessments that were done to assess the mean stocks using different techniques, some of the NRCS soil databases, SORGO and STATSCO, and looking at block kriging and kriging techniques and also embedded transfer function, we see also how these numbers compare relative to an assessment derived look at mean soil organic carbon stocks to 1 meter depth, as indicated over here. So again, it's a very small proportion that we are dealing with. Now, if you look at the whole state of Florida, again, at the topsoil, the absolute values of carbon sequestered is about 0.00174 petagram per year relative to the greenhouse gas emissions across the whole state of Florida, assessed on recent number by the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, 0.29 petagram per year. And of course, we see again that these numbers are relatively very small relative to the greenhouse gas emissions that were estimated. Now, let us look a little bit in more detail at the carbon sequestration rates by field observed land use. We see also that it is quite uneven if we are looking at various land use classes. For example, the wetland soils sequester, of course, soil organic carbon, but also improved pastures have good capabilities sequester carbon. Whereas other systems, like for example citrus and also agricultural systems, like shown over here in rangeland, indicated here by RA, of course have limited capability to sequester carbon. In some instances in upland forest that are xeric, we are dealing even with carbon losses, like those sites here also measured in citrus. Now, if you upscale these data to the landscape scale, we see also quite interesting patterns emerging. This is in quite simple upscaled model where we identify also regional differences. In essence, we have carbon losses here in the Panhandle area, but also in the Okeechobee Basin. In particular, also in the region that is south of Lake Okeechobee, these are histosols where oxidation of carbon is a big, big problem. So we are losing at an accelerated rate also soil organic carbon due to cropping and agriculture in this in South Florida. But you see also that some carbon losses are interspersed throughout the whole state. The highest carbon sequestration rates are located cutting across mainly in the center over here, as you see by the dark green colors. Now, how do we model this system? Because we want to understand also how soil organic carbon stocks are distributed across the state and what is driving the soil organic carbon stock accumulation and also the sequestration. So we use the conceptual model step up to accomplish this, identifying environmental properties that have the potential to correlate with soil organic carbon stocks or pools or sequestration rates. In essence, identifying soil, topographic, ecological, and geological variables, but also some properties that relate to more dynamic properties like climate, atmospheric data, water, biota, in particular remote sensing derived properties that can help us to identify the phenology and also land use and land cover patterns across the state of Florida, and also some human factors. Now, these step variables are spatially explicit layers, and some of them are even temporally explicit. In particular here the up variables that also identify dynamic patterns, in essence accumulated, for example, temperature or temperature trends that are included in these, in essence, spatially and temporally explicit maps. Now we merge them with our soil carbon observations across the whole state, over 1,000 samples, and in essence used various techniques to model these relationships using regression trees, ensemble regression trees, and I will present you a few of our results to predict soil carbon stocks, sequestration rates, and also pools. Model validation was also conducted. Now, these are models to use the step-up modeling concept to assess the current total carbon stocks across the state of Florida in the topsoil. This was a comprehensive data set, and different methods were compared, regression trees and random forest, as shown in this little table that shows the validation results. In essence, we had an R-square 0.6 and 0.75. You also see the RMSD values and the RPD values. Again, like in previous talks, we used a split of calibration and validation, and in this table, only the validation results are shown. But important to know is also what is driving these models, what were the best predictor variables. And there are many. These are results shown from the random forest prediction model to infer on soil organic carbon stocks. And the color coding might help here to briefly present our results, because in essence, some of the climatic variables indicated here in red color, some of the soil variables indicated in brown color, and some of the water-related or soil-water-related variables indicated in blue color are the highest predictor variables. So these variables enable us to infer on soil organic carbon stocks. Now this is slightly different if you look at an model derived from an ensemble tree in bagging mode, where we use the step-up model concept to infer on soil organic carbon sequestration rates. Again, in the topsoil. We see a different identification of predictor variables of importance. that except for superficial geology, which is shown here in purple, that had high predictive power, but also mainly green-colored variables inferring on vegetation and phenology, and also the climatic variables here shown these are climatic variables that are highlighted here in blue color. Now, this is quite important that there are different sets of environmental predictors that allow us to infer on carbon sequestration rates and stocks. Now, let's blend in some of the more specific properties derived in four hydrology basins in northeast Florida. See here the land use patterns that are very diverse, as well as the soil supporters across the region. Again, we identified the soil organic carbon stocks from the historic data set at 402 sites. We unfortunately had a gap here in between the sampling, which did not occur in our current sampling design, which was conducted in 2009. But this also shows us that most of the values are really gains, soil organic carbon gains that we measured. Now, in terms of the distribution of gains and losses, again, they are interspersed, quite mixed across the collocated sites where we compared historic and current soil organic carbon gains and losses, as you can see on this little map. Now, if you compare two different time periods, the historic data set here and a map showing the soil organic carbon stocks across the four hydrology basins, accounting for a value of 102 teragram of carbon, whereas the current soil organic carbon stocks, and here in the legend, it also shows that these values are higher, indicating and suggesting simply by the interpolated soil organic carbon stocks that we are dealing here with much higher carbon values in 2009, about 211 teragram carbon. Now, if we look at the carbon change and also blend out the high variance values that truly are probably interpolation errors and focus on those areas where we can make a comparison, it enables us also to see that we are dealing mainly in this area with carbon gains, not losses. Now, the highest soil organic carbon sequestration rates in these four basins were associated with hardwood and cypress swamp, about 51 gram per carbon. Lowest one in xeric upland forest and nearly even in row crops. Now, urbanizing sites was quite interesting, and you see here the results that most systems that were urbanized actually gained carbon. Only one really land use class lost carbon. But these values, of course, are relatively small. Now, in terms of spectral data, as we've seen from the previous talks, has lots of capability to also put us into position to assess also carbon across these sites with much more cost-effective and rapid than also using traditional lab-based techniques. And we've seen also quite convincing results from visible near-infrared and also from mid-infrared that give us very high accuracy and good fits to infer on carbon. Here are some summary findings from various studies conducted in Florida and Texas by our group, where not only total carbon, but also carbon fractions were predicted very well. And of course, these capabilities are what we need to also enable us to look at whole landscapes and whole systems that identify also carbon change and carbon stocks across a whole landscape. Now, I come here to the conclusions of this talk. We found that in Florida, soils act as a carbon sink over decades of time that we looked at. And they store immense amounts of carbon in the topsoil, but also in the subsoil, about 2 to 6.8 petagram, depending on the method. And of course, there's lots of variability depending which upscaling method is used to derive these numbers. Now, relative to that, the soil organic carbon sequestration rates are relatively small. Less than 1% of Florida's greenhouse gas emissions and less than 0.05% of total soil carbon storage. We saw also the driving variables that allow us to infer on carbon stocks and carbon sequestration rates, and these are slightly different sets that allow us to also build models. But despite the small soil organic carbon accumulation rates that take really very long time frames, of course, we cannot forget and overlook the numerous positive co-effects that allude to soil ecosystem services in the system. However, if we intend to monitor in system and track also soil carbon sequestration rates over a large area like a whole state, then of course techniques like spectral-based models are a very promising and cost-effective technique to derive accurate predictions, as we have seen also in the two previous talks, that allow us to conduct soil observations and monitoring across large landscapes. Thank you very much. And
any questions for Sabina?
Very interesting talk. Your historic database extended over a very long time. So how do you use that to calculate
Yeah. Now, for each historic soil sample, we also had a timestamp when the sample was collected, and we used that timestamp to identify the number of years or months that passed by to compare it to, in essence, our current sampling, where we also knew the time, the exact time, and so identified also and in essence, standardized by the time, so that we could calculate the soil organic carbon sequestration rates on a per-year basis.
So your data based on, how deep soil depth is, just 1 meter depth, or have different soil depth?
Right. Now, the historic data were horizon-based samples that we also, for some of the comparisons, had to standardize to 1 meter depth, for example, also to make them comparable to identify soil organic carbon sequestration rate. We standardized our historic samples also to 0 to 20 centimeter depth to make them comparable to the current data that were collected at a soil depth of 0 to 20 centimeters. So we looked for the soil organic carbon sequestration rates only at the topsoil because of cost also involved. Deeper sampling was not possible in our current sampling event. But it's true, standardization techniques were required, harmonization of data methods were required to allow us to make this comparison.
Okay, so you didn't compare different
soil depths? Yeah. No, the comparison of soil organic carbon sequestration rates could only be made at the, in the topsoil. No, unfortunately not, because roots were sieved out to 2 millimeter soils, and of course, in such a huge event, it was simply not possible to account for that. But it would be very interesting and might allude also to slightly different numbers, of course, if you consider the carbon pool also stored in roots, because that's a whole different game because of the variability that you also, of course, then introduce into your data set, depending where the actual soil sample was taken, depending on the land cover and vegetation, of course, rooting systems are very different.
Okay.
Fourth slide.
So, yeah, so you actually change the infrared, the title.
all across the whole state. And now, it's this one?
No.
Yeah, this was actually not our study. This was a study by Guo et al. This is just these are our data. This is in comparison to published data that are documented in the literature. Take a look also at this. These are StatsCo data. These are very coarse, in essence, carbon assessments that were done, in essence, across the whole U.S. And here blended out the soil organic carbon storage assessment. These numbers are derived only for the state of Florida. So 35.3 kilogram per square meter were assessed. They used what they call midpoint to characterize, in essence, their carbon values. But StatsCo is a coarse-scale database at a map scale of 1 to 250,000. And, of course, it might have lots of uncertainty associated with it. Actually, we don't know what the uncertainty is in this database. But it's the best also available at a coarse scale that was consistently done across the whole U.S. SOILCO data would be also quite interesting to look at, to compare how different it is compared to StatsCo.
We're going into the break, but we have a last question.
So my question gets back to the first one, and that is, if you measured it over the change over a 30-year time frame, I'm thinking of how Florida has changed over that 30 years, and using what you would calculate to be an average is representative of what might be happening today.
Right. I mean, lots of changes over. Right. Yeah. No, of course, we have only a subset of the population where we have measurements and actually can collocate our samples. But it's true across the whole state there are immense changes that occurred in terms of urbanization, losses of wetlands, and also changes among agriculture and rangeland systems. Even among agricultural crops over the last four or five decades, we have seen tremendous changes across the state of Florida. In terms of agricultural production, what stayed pretty stable is the forest coverage, as a matter of fact. That is also very high with 46%. And, of course, it is also quite important to consider land use change and also probably climate change, where land use change is probably much more prominent than climate change across the state of Florida, because if you look at long-term trends of precipitation and temperature, you have problems to identify significant changes in the southeastern U.S. that are in terms of temperature increases and also changes in precipitation. But, of course, we don't know in the future in terms of how much droughts we will face. And this has been predicted for the state of Florida because this might mean also more oxidation, more drought conditions that we might face, even more carbon losses that we expect, depending also combined with land use changes. These are things that are not so well understood. But we need better models that help us to also make estimates and maybe predict into the future based on some backcasting that we could do also in the statewide assessment.
Okay.